This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora e te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is a show and podcast that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Mike, and here we are once again, all huddled together in the ORFM studio, just like a mini AA meeting. It feels like quite a long time since I've actually been in the studio.
I know, but it's been some time, Mike.
It has been some time.
We've missed you.
Thank you. Likewise. Yeah, and joining myself and Sue in the studio this evening, we'd like to extend a supreme welcome to our guest, Meredith. Hey, Meredith, how are you going?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks, Mike.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. What's been going on?
Good question.
You should start with that story when we got here together out on the street.
Good point. Sue decided, she said, we can take the lift together. And I thought, well, this is going to be, fairly straight and simple, but nothing's ever straight with us alcoholics. And so we're in the lift and a girl gets in and we realise that we're actually in the basement. So we're supposed to be on level two, but like I said, you've got to go down before you can come back up. So here we are.
Nice little metaphor. I love that.
Hey. Hey, it's quite appropriate, isn't it?
It does.
Tonight, the themes of the program is breaking down the secrecy that fuels addiction and looking at the approach and significance of step five within the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Righto, let's get started with the show. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life, apparently. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening to the main theme of recovery by way of the AA program, each one of us has finally come or is coming to the realisation that our lives are adversely affected by drinking. We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. The most important thing is that we also realise that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problems out into the open with other alcoholics.
Great. Now it's my turn. Thank you, Mike. Now we're back to a lovely sort of routine, if you like, because last time we had Alan on and AA together, that was Katrina and Craig, which was such a cool show, but that was more orientated, I guess, along, meeting the two worlds together. But we'll stay within the AA program maybe tonight, eh? So the AA preamble, we always start the meeting in the rooms of AA by reading out this following little sort of, it's a preamble, right? So I shouldn't keep going on about that. So Meredith, would you like to do the honours this evening?
Yeah, sure, thanks. So the AA preamble reads as, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Fantastic. And just following on from that, so what you hear tonight on the radio, the opinions of those in the tonight show, not necessarily the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. We have guests here that are invited to share their story and experience. So really, it's just us, recovering alcoholics, talking about different aspects of our own recovery. And on to the daily reflection. Being Tuesday the 26th, typically the daily reflection is leading into step five, and this is titled Turning Negative to Positive. And it starts like this. Our spiritual and emotional growth in AA does not depend so deeply upon success as it does upon our failure and setbacks. If you will bear this in mind, I think that your slip will have the effect of kicking you upstairs instead of down. As Bill sees it, it's page 184, and it keeps going. In keeping with the pain and adversity which our founders encountered and overcame in establishing AA, Bill W. sent us a clear relapse can provide a positive experience towards abstinence and a lifetime of recovery. A relapse brings truth to what we hear repeatedly in meetings. Don't take the first drink. It reinforces the belief in the progressive nature of the disease, and it drives home the need for and beauty of humility in our spiritual program. Simple truths come in complicated ways to me when I become ego-driven.
Cool.
Quite a chunk.
It is. It's a chunky number, isn't it? quite relatable. I find that's kind of quite relatable in terms of I still find it hard to kind of always view, like, you know, my failures and setbacks as positives, but I definitely can acknowledge that it's all of those that brought me to the rooms and are the reason that I got sober and I'm still here and still sober. So some days it's harder to find gratitude for all of the stupid things that I did, but, you know, I do think that I did learn some things from them.
Yeah, I mean, gosh. You know, if we hadn't made, you know, the mistakes we made, we probably wouldn't have made it here. And it's certainly the case for me. Had to hit, you know, a couple of rock bottoms. Yeah, not just one.
And it also talks, about sort of the idea of relapse, even though that can be many things, though. But, you know, for me... that was just on the, yeah, that was, how do I describe it? And I was just listening to something before driving here, and it was about this sort of 8 to 10 year, sometimes journey before you can really get that sort of hit of sobriety, you know, when you're sort of realizing that bit of trouble, but you can ignore it. But then you've, you know, when you come to that sort of position and, yeah, and you've, arrive and you quite get committed, you know, to the program. So,
yeah. I guess, you know, that whole unmanageability varies between, you know, different people. But I certainly know, you know, my first step would have read, you know, I've become powerless over alcohol and my life had become completely out of control, not unmanageable. So, you know, that's, and like I say, it varies with different people, but I certainly know I couldn't carry on, you know, the way I was. There's just no way.
Yeah. And often in the rooms, and sometimes they say, you know, don't take, you know, that first drink. Like, is it that classic line, a grateful alcoholic doesn't drink? And at first you don't really sort of hear what that means.
It sounds so bizarre. I mean, how can you be a grateful alcoholic? It just doesn't, you know, when you first come into the rooms, I certainly know for me, how can I be a grateful alcoholic? Like, I mean, I wouldn't have wished this disease on anybody, you know. And I even remember saying something like, you know, gosh, I'd rather have had cancer. And, you know, it's absurd to even think that, you know, that was my thinking, but that, you know, once you realise what that gratitude actually pertains to, it makes perfect sense. It really does. And, you know, that doesn't become apparent until you actually do the steps and you do get some real relief, if you like, from the disease. And, you break it down.
That's such a nice way to put it, relief. And I guess that if we segue, you know, into perhaps not the theme of the program, but where we're heading into step five, that idea of, you know, it's not a confession, But, you know, let's have a, you know, how does that work?
Well, step five comes after step four, eh? So we take our moral inventory in step four, and then in step five...
You've got this covered.
We share it.
Straight in there. And step I'm five, looking at my notes, and you're like, I got this.
And then step five, we share it. You know, we start being honest with ourselves, and we share that with another human being and with the God of our understanding, whatever we take that to mean. But it's kind of about being honest, right? And it's about kind of opening up about that stuff with ourselves first and foremost, and then with somebody else as well. Often a sponsor, but not necessarily.
Yeah. So, and I, Meredith, in terms of your stepping, so can you sort of tell us a bit about how your experience of that step was?
Step five. So I spent a good... probably 2 to 3 months, essentially, on my step four, my inventory. There's a bit of contemplation, procrastination in that step for me. But also, you know, just I like to do things well. And so, you know, I like probably a lot of people in early recovery, understanding the nature of that step and, you know, but realising that you can't, that you, you know, you can't, I'm the daughter of a journalist and so, you know, I if I write something down, it's, you know, there's a lot of words. And so, you know, I had a fellow in AA who, I got them to glance over. It was almost like a proofread of that step because I wasn't sure, A, whether I was on the right track, B, whether I was giving too much information, and C, you know, whether, what I needed to do. And so, It took me a wee while to do that, and once I showed it to him, he was like, absolutely bang on, but you don't need to write an essay, and I quite like writing essays, but that's probably my dad's influence there, but I'm pretty sure my sponsor didn't want to hear an essay. You've got to abbreviate it to a point where, you're picking out, what it's all about, essentially, and getting to the bottom of the problem, I suppose. And so after about 3 months, I was pretty much ready to take my step five. And obviously I chose my sponsor because she's awesome. And I really love her and respect her and have a real connection with her. So that was really important for me to, I'd had a couple of sponsors chosen for me in the early kind of days of my recovery and they weren't a right fit. So, you know, that's one thing that I would say is you choose your sponsor because you'll know. I certainly did. So we met at my sponsor's place. They do suggest that you meet somewhere that's neutral. But my sponsor likes to do it at her place, which is good. I didn't really want to do it at my place because, they suggest you don't do it at your own place because it's, you know, kind of stuff you want to unpack and be able to, you know, not kind of still have it sitting there if you like. So, so I met at her place and she made me a giant cup of tea, which woman after my heart. And so she loves her tea the way I like mine, and so she could make me this beautiful cup of tea. And we sat down, and the room was warm, and, you know, just the whole feeling of it. I was instantly comfortable with my sponsor purely because I'd chosen her and respect her and trust her. And she has the type of sobriety that essentially I want. So, what better reason to choose your sponsor, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's also that they say that a lot of people get to step four, you know, and you've made inventory, if you like, that whole list. And then people sit, you can sit on it.
Mm. Yeah.
And you sit and you wait because it's like that, the vocal sort of, you know, speaking it. That's the whole point, isn't it? To say it out loud and you list it down as opposed to, and then that's the idea of revealing this honest truth about yourself, you know. And then it's hopefully a process of eventually, you know, letting that go. It depends on everyone's an individual, right? Everyone has their own experience. So, yeah, so that often that can, that point right there, you hear sometimes, or that's that point of relapse too, because it's that fear, of. But then there's, for my own experience, it was like, I think I'm ready to do this because I've perhaps got to not so much in the AA program, but I've got to that point of, you know, where am I going, you know, and then I will. Because I don't have that guidance or that sort of, if you like, that punctuation and your sobriety, then I just tend to sort of relax and think, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done here. You know, I'm good to go kind of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to that plan of action, which it sort of says in the big book.
I mean, you know, that's why they have step five, eh? So you can progress from your, from writing down your inventory, you know, you have to be able to, you know, if you can't move on your steps if you just suddenly go, well, I'm just going to skip five because it's a bit uncomfortable, and I don't want anyone to know that stuff, you know. It was unbelievable. You know, I've spoken about relief already tonight, and you know, the relief that I felt, certainly, when I shared that. And maybe I'd already had quite a bit of a heads up on kind of doing that because I'm Catholic. And so, you know, confession, I think, you know, anyone that's been brought up in that faith remembers sitting in a box with a priest and, you know, kind of having confessions. And so my higher power was, he was ready for me, and, you know, I was certainly ready. Thank goodness my higher power's not a priest. So, you know, it was perhaps a little easier. Thank God. Interesting I use that term. To be able to share that with another alcoholic, you know, the power that you plug into is just incredible. I mean, I always liken, you know, when I go to meetings, you know, and it says, I mean, you know, your first step is you're powerless, and so how do you get that power? You know, and you know, with step three, essentially, you know, you use your higher power, and you know, that's what I had to do. And I think, you know, that step three is really important because your higher power needs to be part of that process, I think, in order for you to actually be able to, you know, to pass that stuff on, and to be able to, you know, clear away the wreckage of your past, if you like, and clean your side of the street. I've mentioned before that, you know, I was, and it's used in the big book, you know, that I mean, I was a tornado, and, you know, behind me was this, you know, like the wind had stopped essentially when I stopped drinking, and the wind had stopped, but there was still this massive mess behind me, you know, and that's what happens in a tornado, you know, it whips through, and then, you know, behind you is this, you know, just like absolute shambles, and, you know, so by doing that, you know, with my, you know, my step five, by sharing it with my sponsor, it was just, oh my goodness, you know, I was actually able to clean up all of that stuff, and, you know, I guess I packaged it up, you know, it didn't go off to the, you know, to be burnt and recycled and, you know, whatever you do with your rubbish. I've essentially packaged it so that, you know, I don't put it away forever because, you know, it's, you know, it does say in the big book that, you know, you obviously regret your past but not wish to shut the door on it. And so, you know, I just had to neat and tidy it up a bit. And, but, you know, you can't drive forwards always looking in your rearview mirror. So I can glance and go, oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know, for me, it's a reminder. You know that things were pretty terrible because I need those reminders because I've got a pretty short memory. You know, and you know it was the same with my drinking. As you know, you'd wake up in the morning and you'd be feeling pretty rubbish, and then you know by 3 o'clock, you know, you just, that was all, you know, done and dusted and forgotten about.
Yeah, you find in your FPOS card sort of under the bed and like, oh yeah, I think I've still got still got about $80 left or $20 or $10 or something, you know, and yeah. I'm just going to go and do it all again.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no rhyme or reason.
Absolutely none.
Because you've, alcoholics, right?
Yeah.
One thing I've always like, I guess found interesting about step five is like the exact nature of our wrongs. So it's not necessarily even thinking about like the, it's not listing necessarily all of the individual wrongs. It's like looking at the you know, what was behind it or, you know, the kind of root cause of those things, which I find kind of interesting. For me, lots of that was fear, kind of different kinds of fear, fear of being accepted, fear of failure, fear of all sorts of things. But that seemed to be kind of like the root nature of heaps of my wrongs.
So you can like distill it down to these kind of one or two sort of essential components.
Yeah.
Which
I found interesting.
That's actually a really good point, Mike. The exact nature, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, you write down every single incident you had because, you know, I don't know about you, but by crikey, that would be a big read, you know, like
an epic poem.
It'd be epic.
And that's probably what differentiates it a bit from a confession, eh? Like it's not listing, you know, I didn't go to mass on Sunday, etc. And
I kicked my brother in the shins. Yeah, that kind of stuff. No, the exact nature and I don't know, you know, the words fear and resentment come up time and time again. Yeah. And you know, they still come up in my life because I'm an alcoholic. Mm. And, you know, I don't suddenly put the drink down and I'm no longer an alcoholic. I'll always be an alcoholic. And, you know, my problem is in my thinking. And so, it's the exact nature. Yeah, this is a really good point, actually. Get to the actual bottom of it. You know, that way you can deal with it as it comes up because, you know, my problems don't suddenly stop either. You know, life goes on and, my thinking's getting clearer. There's no question about that. But
And gradually gaining those tools, right?
Yeah.
How to, as I say, live life or the whole... I love that expression too that I hear sometimes. It's like that design for living.
Yeah.
You know, you can have this new way ahead of you.
Yeah.
To think and be, which is, for me, was completely compelling once I sort of understood what that meant, you know, embodying that day to day, sort of seeing those rewards that come through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still don't understand how that's kind of worked, but I'll take it, you know.
Yeah.
Why not, you know?
Yeah.
That's really good.
There's something I found a bit humbling about doing a fifth step. Because for me and for lots of other people, I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but other people have shared a similar thing that, you know, I came into the room thinking that I was a special kind of messed up, you know, that, that you know, you guys wouldn't relate to or understand at all. I'm special, you know.
Yeah.
And but then, you know, but sharing things with my sponsor and, you know, things that I thought were these things that, you know, no one else had ever done or thought of and then them being like, yeah, me too. and there's something kind of, in a way, nice about just letting out that stuff and then sort of, you know, getting some reassurance that, So there's the humility kind of there, and realizing that you're just an Elkie. You're not like a, you're not a psychopath. Thankfully, I'm not.
I'm quite pleased too, actually, sitting here, Mike, that you're not a psychopath. No, that's absolutely true. And, my sponsor, the first thing she says is, what's the worst thing you've done? And you're going, oh, gosh. Let's start with the worst, get it over and done with. No surprises at all, there's no shock on her face, oh, my goodness, Meredith. It's quite liberating. Mm. It's hard to even put into words, really, the feelings that you have when you've done this, this step. It's just phenomenal. And we said the third step prayer after I did my inventory, and oh my goodness, after I shared it essentially, and we both got on our knees and did it together, and we just cried the whole way through it. I was just like, wow. People ask me, have I had a spiritual awakening? If that's what it feels like, then I don't know, everyone's, but it was just incredible, incredible.
Awesome. Just powerful stuff.
Mm.
And did you do what they suggested? Did you go home and sort of, do you look like, not do anything for an hour and rest?
Yeah, I did. I was quite exhausted, to be honest. But I also, when I was driving home, my sponsor kind of lives in an area with, you've got to drive through the bush to kind of get out of where she lives. And it was just like, I love the bush. That's, you can call God the great outdoors, and that's, probably is a wee bit for me, outdoors. We both share a love of the outdoors. And, oh, man, that relief. It's like, 10 tons taken off my shoulders, and I just smiled all the way through this piece of bush, just smiled but felt this warmth in my heart, and amazing.
And that's got such a special way, to hear about it, and here we are like in a recording studio and sharing that. And what's amazing is that, this week's special for you. Talk about that.
Yes, of course.
Very special. And I got a bit carried away early last week. And so tonight, you've had your party, or yes, you're having your party.
Yeah. So, Saturday, I've had so much cake this week. It's been quite crazy. Last Saturday was my first soberversary, if you like.
Cool.
It was pretty cool because Friday night went to a meeting, and then we went and had a coffee with some of my fellow AA peeps, and then one of the guys suggested we have a vigil, so we stay up all night and get me through my first year of sobriety. And I was like, what a blimmin' damn good idea.
Cool.
And so I've got this caravan at home, and I call it my AA caravan because it's where I have my meetings with my sponsor, and and I do a bit of prayer and meditation out there, and it's an old Zephyr caravan. It's quite big, and it's quite brightly decorated. I did it up myself, so they popped over for the night, and we stayed up till midnight, and swam me through to my first year. So it was a lot of fun.
So you had one of those classic caravan sort of fold-out tape, the tables, did you?
It hasn't actually got a table. It's sort of bench seats, and, it's pretty cool. So we just, sat and talked all sorts of things, you know. And I it was cool because I got to know some of these people on a different level, you know, like, you know, when you're at AA meetings, you know, obviously you share, you listen to people's shares, and unless you go and have coffee with them or, you know, do something outside of AA, you don't really get to know a great deal about them other than what their recovery looks like. And so, it was really special. It was cool. We had one guy on as DJ, and he had a playlist going, which was really neat. And it was just wonderful.
It's cool. I mean, it's just also a really good day just to have fun, you know, and to know that recovery is fun.
Recovery's hugely fun. You know, and people go, oh my gosh, you know, how do you have fun? Like, I mean, I can tell you now, my drinking was not fun. Mm. By the end, it was, you know, the complete opposite of fun.
And you can stay up till midnight and you might be a bit tired the next day, but you don't have a hangover. You can remember everything that happened the night before. And
exactly. And, you know, you can actually have intelligent conversations with people, and you can, you know, get on a level that you certainly would never have got on, you know, if you were drinking. It's just, It was magic. It was really cool.
So if we look at that year of sustained or continuous sobriety, and I've been part of that with you, which has been fantastic getting to know you. Really special, by the way, really cool. And so tell us if you feel like, you know, this is the classic move, you know, your experience of what was happening before that year.
Yeah.
Or if you might sort of give us a part of that story.
Sort of what was it like, what happened? And
yeah, the experience, like strength and hope. I was just trying to couch it in a different way. Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Sorry.
So, you know, I can honestly say, you know, 14 months ago, even 13 months ago, you know, like I was starting to drink in the mornings, you know, like who'd have thought. I just, you know, I just can't believe that's where this disease took me, but it did. And, you know, it was progressive, but, you know, I'd have periods where things were okay. And I always say, you know, the wheels were coming off, but I hauled out my wheel brace and tightened the nuts for a bit, and, you know, and things kind of, you know, the vehicle was still moving without the wheels wobbling. But, there was just, you know, when you reflect back on it, drinking's always been an issue for me. You know, the minute I took, I had alcohol in my body, you know, right from, you know, I was probably 13 when I first started drinking. I first tried alcohol. And just, it was horrendous. My next door, well, it wasn't horrendous. You know, I mean, the hangover was horrendous, but the experience was, it was incredible. And it, I loved it right from the get-go. And it, you know, it took pain away for me, you know, trauma and other issues, which, you know, I now know were, you know, a lot of my problems based in my mind and my thinking. And it just, it numbed a lot of stuff for me, and it made me feel a part of, you know, I could be comfortable in this world and fit in, you know, because I didn't fit in. You know, I was bullied really badly when I was younger, and this isn't a pity party for me, just by the way. I don't know. Maybe it's the red hair. The fact I was the smallest. Those are a range of things. But probably because I was an alcoholic and probably quite different to, you know, to kids at school who I don't know what they're doing now. Who knows? You know, maybe there are some alcoholics out there. I guarantee there are. But, hey, it's me that decides that and whether I want to do something about it. But, yeah, so living just like drinking daily, but, you know, drinking very heavily, drinking and driving, smashing my truck up, my car up. I had a brand new car and I just, that poor car, she was pretty well dinged. But, you know, the insanity of it is, you know, I was doing these things, illegal, you know, stuff, hanging out with, I used to work at the prison, and hanging out with, you know, people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with, just doing stuff that was just... It was nuts. And my partner, a policeman. Lying next to him, you know, after I'd been, you know, going out drink driving, and it's insanity.
Quite a contrast, isn't it?
Oh, just a wee bit. Yeah. But that's alcoholism, you know, it's crazy, you know, that your life's going to end up like that. But, you know, it's sunk its teeth into me and, you know, I had no control. Mm. No control, absolutely powerless.
So. And was it your idea to head to a... Was it your idea... Sorry, I've got to get closer here. Was it your idea to come into a meeting or was it suggested... How did you sort of, what was that moment? Or was there a moment, you know?
Was there a moment? There were many moments, but I think, you know, so prior to my first meeting, I'd sort of dipped my toes in AA a few years before. And, you know, you know, I'd being brought up strict Catholic and then, you know, by the time I'd made my, choice not to go to church, that was kind of when I started drinking proper and, you know, became my God. And so, I struggled with the God thing in the beginning. Mm. You know, I really just, my ever-punishing God that I'd been brought up with wasn't who I thought was going to get me through this. And so, the God thing, really bothered me. And so, oh, no, AA doesn't work for me because, you know, I don't believe in God. And then, you know, I was just desperate. I'd hit a major rock bottom, you know, once again. My rock bottom bounced and smacked me in the chops, and you know, I was bruised and battered and bleeding, and I had to, you know, sit my ass on the chair and just listen for the message. And I guess, you know, I heard the right thing at the right time. So, yeah, essentially the long-winded answer to your question. So
it can take as long as you like. We've got all night.
Yeah.
Really, it's compelling, you know. Yeah.
So, I heard the message. I took myself to the meeting because that morning, after a pretty horrific night with my partner and my daughter, and where I'd been drinking and I'd picked them up, and then my partner came home and I was really drunk and trying to make dinner but could barely stand up, and then I went. You know, kind of, I went to bed and I just cried and cried and cried. You know, that kind of, you know, those tears where you feel like you just can't stop. You know, just that absolute despair where you're just like, what is wrong with me? Like, wrong with me? How can, you know, I just, yeah, so much despair. And then I got up the next morning and I drank again. The insanity, you know, it just, but that's this disease, it's insidious. It's just, you know, another word, you know, that's in the big book, which I really love. And, it, you know, when you read the description of it, it's rapacious. And, it, you know, it's just that need to just, you know, have you know, all. And that's what it was like. And so, yeah, so I got up the next day and I drank before my 10 o'clock session with my psychotherapist.
This is getting better and better.
That's a really good thing to do, isn't it? Because she won't know. Hell no. You know, like you think it's so stupid because you drink and then you think, oh, you know, they can't tell I'm slurring my words. And, you know, to me, I sounded perfectly fine. And normally we'd have a Zoom meeting. And for some reason, I don't know. I don't know what was going on. But the video wouldn't connect. And so she couldn't see me. And I was like, oh, that's even better. She, you know, I mean, she won't hear it in my voice. And then, you know, sort of we started the session. And she goes, Meredith, have you been drinking? My response, don't be ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous. Why would I be drinking before our session? You know, it was like, I mean, I laugh about it now. But, you know, she basically said to me, you know, that our sessions won't work and then they're of no value to if you've been drinking. Oh, no, I haven't been drinking, I'm fine. So I got through the session, but I was really angry and I was almost hung up on her. Like, I was,
you were angry with her?
I was angry with her.
How
she,
dare
oh,
she?
Oh, God.
How dare she? How dare she? Like, I mean, seriously, how dare she pull me up? Like, oh, my goodness.
The audacity of it all. I'm paying her good money for this.
Yeah, don't judge me. Don't judge me, bitch. like, seriously. And so, yeah, I was like, I got off the phone and then I was really pissed about it. And then so I wrote her an email because this is, you know, I couldn't just say to her, hey, yeah, I don't know, I'm just a coward. And so I wrote her an email and I said, hey, can we cut our sessions down to, well, we were doing weekly, can we cut them down to like once a month or something? And then she's so diplomatic and amazing. She just sent me this message back. I can't imagine what had happened during this session, why you would suddenly want to, you know, kind of cut our sessions down, but you know, if that's what you want, da, da, da. And then of course the guilt kicked in. But there, yeah, that was my last drink, essentially the one before that session. And so, yeah, I just realised, you know, that it just couldn't go on. It really couldn't go on. I was paying this woman all this money, you know, for this psychotherapy. And, you know, I could, yeah, it's not going to work if I'm drinking because, yeah, I'm not going to have an open mind. And so once I went to the meeting Thursday night and just heard the message, heard it, you know, reasonably loud and clear. And
so it's the Thursday night Dunedin meeting.
Yeah, and so I just
I know that one.
Yeah, so yes. I just kept going back. It was really essentially only one meeting a week for I don't know. I think I you know a couple of weeks and then realised that you know I needed to get to more meetings and so I incorporated Sunday nights and yeah, just now I'm a bit of a meeting tart.
I like to get around the meetings a bit as well.
Yeah.
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 Is it a meeting at lunchtime?
It's good, eh? Yeah, because.
Definitely. We're all nodding at each other, aren't we? We're all nodding. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's, as I was saying, that's how I've invited, you know, found you to come into the program this evening. So,
yes.
By just gradually, you know, getting to know you and seeing, not because of that, of course, but it's more like watching that transformation. And I guess, and I watched it through, you know, I met you on a Friday night meeting, and then gradually sort of knitted together, you know, this new friendship as well. It's awesome. And like my kids, like 3 to 5 meetings. Some people love their one meeting. Other people are much more intensive about that, especially in their early sobriety. Mm. And then continuing on, like I meet people on the daily that would go to 5 meetings a week, and they've been sober for like 29, 30 years.
I know. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I jump across a couple of fellowships, I kind of throw them both together, but they're both 12-step fellowships. But I guess I get to a meeting almost every day, to be honest, at the minute.
Wow. I think, you know, the more meetings I can get to, the better. Some weeks I'm just tired and I'm, you know, super busy and, you know, I can't get to as many as I'd like sometimes. But, you know, I said in my share the other night on Sunday night, I said, you know, I hope to think that I've earned my chair, you know, my seat in these meetings. And I just pray that, you know, that seat never gets cold.
When you came back to the rooms this last time, did you think, what were you thinking, I'm going to come back and get and stay sober, or do you think I need to do something for the meantime, or did you have any kind of thoughts before you kind of got the message and got hooked?
I think, Mike, I remember, you know, a couple of things that I shared at that first meeting, and, you know, when I'd have these periods of abstinence, I don't call it sobriety because it really wasn't, periods of absence, you know, like I'm really into my sport, and so I'd pick a race to do, a big, you know, ridiculous running race, and I'd abstain from alcohol for that period of training. You know, it gave me a focus, and, you know, so, but also this kind of false sense of security, because, you know, as soon as the race was over, then I'd go, I can drink like a lady. You know, I'll try and drink on, you know.
So you can rationalise that.
Oh, yeah.
You can rationalise health performance, doing your multi-marathons, which I know you sort of get involved in. But then on the flip side of that, it just reverts back to type.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, like, I just think, you know, what an absolute paradox, you know, like, the life that I was living, I was just, you know, super fit and healthy and just, you know, shoving alcohol down my neck. And the disease doesn't make sense, you know. And I know a lot of people that are really, you know, heavily involved in sport, and, you know, alcohol can be a massive part of that. And, you know, I think New Zealand culture, let's face it, it's, you know, it's part of our culture. And so it becomes quite normalised. And so, you know, it's just like, yeah, you have a couple of drinks after you've, you know, been for a run, or you've had a game of tennis, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're involved in, it kind of ends up at the pub at the end of it. But mine was so much more than that. It wasn't, you know, end up at the pub, have a couple of pints, go home and have a lovely meal, and, you know, and read a nice book and watch a movie. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's, you know, just you don't have that first drink. I didn't understand, don't have that first drink and you can't get drunk, you know, like, my goodness, you know. I remember an old guy in one of my first meetings. This is when I dipped my toes into AA. And he came up to me and he said, "Well, Meredith," he's like been about 100 years sober. and he was like, "Well, Meredith, one drink is too many and 100's not enough. And I'm like, what's he on about? Like, I don't understand what he means. But I 100% understand what he means, you know, like one's too many. Because if I pick up one, I'm off to the races, you know. And it's the gallops, it's not, you know, I'm not just trotting along there in a sulky. I'm freaking, you know, I'm the jockey. I'm off and I got a whip. Yeah. So just, yeah, I can never again.
So there's a healthy fear in that.
Yeah.
That keeps with you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely a fear. I mean, I live in fear. It's, you know, probably the biggest reason for my alcoholism. But, yeah, I think that's a healthy fear to know that, you know.
We can change it. You're cautious, all those types of things.
Yeah.
If you've been direct, that's when you have that wonderful support, knowing what to do with those. There's a way out. A way through that. And, sponsor, sort of, you've got friendships in the fellowship.
Yeah.
And, of course, otherwise you've got your partner, which I'm sure is radically different, perhaps. You know, the relationships that grow and change.
Yeah. Look, you know, it's interesting you say your partner, but my partner's not an alcoholic. So, you know, all things recovery, we're not all created equal in that sense, you know, and in AA, there are friendships that are the strongest, most loving and kindest that I've ever had in my life. I don't have a massive group of friends because I'm an isolator, you know. I like to huddle up and, you know, wallow in my own self-pity. I mean, why do I want to share that stuff? It's like I would just, you know, I'd rather just, you know, drink it away on my own. And that's, you know, that's probably because I'm the youngest of 10, you know, the forgotten about child. And so I'm okay being alone. But having said that, in sobriety, I'm probably less comfortable being alone than I've ever been now, you know, because I know that, you know, if I don't pick up the phone and I don't go to meetings and I don't connect with, you know, with the fellowship, you know, I haven't got that, you know, that unity side of the triangle working for me. So
nicely said.
Yeah, I need it. I really need it. Mm. I need this, you know, like I need the air I breathe. I really do.
That whole connection is the opposite of addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Johan Hari's catchphrase, who I tried to email once to get to come on the show. The guy that came up with that phrase. He replied to my email, but he's too busy though. Oh. Hi, Johan, if you're out there.
Oh boy, we've come to our tail end of this.
Yeah, sorry, gosh.
No, sorry. Thank you very much for sharing your story. It's been really engaging and awesome to have you here.
Yeah.
And now we're just going to find
out. Going to rock.
The promises.
Because, yeah, you're quite, I mean, promises. The promises are pretty awesome, but do you want to give us a quick?
Yeah, just, because, keep it brief.
Why don't we actually close with the promises then we could say our good nights now,
sounds good. All right.
And then, so thank you for being on the show this evening. It's been great having you here, Meredith. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, congrats. That's so awesome. Thank
you. And what I'll do is just quickly read out how to contact AA. So here, where am I? Sorry, everyone that's listening. Here, we're going to get back on track. Here we go. So here are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You're most welcome to call us on 0800 22 96 75 7, or the New Zealand website is fantastic too, and that's aa.org.nz. So if you need to get hold of us, if you need to come to a meeting, if you need to reach out, they're the contact details. So that's awesome. So now, Meredith, wonderful, wonderful. This is your favourite part. This is step, not step, I'm fumbling about. Help me out here, Mike.
Is it the 10th step promises or something like that? Take it away.
Yeah.
It's chapter 6, Into Action.
Are you reading them or am I?
You're reading them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is going to be part of the show that we've
distracted. Absolutely. This is actually some of the best parts. Oh, this is one of my favourite parts of the meeting because it's, you know, this stuff happens. True story. Okay. Chapter 6, Into Action. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us that we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
Being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they will always materialise if we work for them. Tongue tied.
Thank you so much. That's all we have time for tonight. Take care of yourselves out there. Until next time, matewa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.